earthly apocalypse. And I'm going to pull this out real quick. But you can hear me still. We studied last time chapter 12, where we see that there is this great scene in battle in heaven. Do you recall that? And it started with Jesus ascending to the throne. And then there's a great war with Michael and the archangels. And who is cast down? And at that moment, we see that pronouncement. Now, four things came. Do you remember what they were? Salvation, the kingdom, the power, and the authority of our Lord has come. So this is a picture behind the scenes what was happening when Jesus was actually on the cross and in the grave and ascended to heaven. And so the reason that's important is because God, before he created the heavens and the earth, way back here, had a plan. And that plan throughout the Old Testament is called what? No, it's not. No. The mystery. Now, in the New Testament, when it's revealed, what is it called? All right. So I know you knew, but you have to make sure. It was a mystery because it was only understood in the mind of God. Even the prophets didn't understand that. Now, everything that God does, who's there always countering it and trying to destroy it? It's Satan. You know, God made it was very good, and he's already tempting Eve and Adam and gets them who were intended to have eternal life. He introduces sin in the world. It got so bad that Noah's day, God had to destroy everything except Noah and start over, right? Someone had their hand up? Okay. So in this plan, we're going to see that everything that, again, God created this nation of Israel, and he rescues them out of Egypt and blesses them and enters into this covenant relationship that's likened to a marriage. And while he's up on the mountain giving the covenant law to Moses, what are they doing the very first thing? They've already been spiritually unfaithful to God by worshiping this golden calf. And God goes, he was going to destroy him right then. Every time that God does something wonderful, Satan is just destroying it. And that's all throughout this history. But that's okay, because God's overarching plan is he's sovereign. It's going to prevail, isn't it? And so amazingly enough, to all the angels, when Jesus was born on the earth, they didn't know what's going on either, did they? That's in 1 Peter chapter 1. The prophets didn't understand. It says even the angels looked over to try to understand. But now God has become a man. And what does Satan try to do immediately? So let's destroy all the babies so we can catch Jesus in that dragnet and we can have victory over God. Because he's captured in his, you know, God is in a body. If we can kill the body, we can kill, you know, we can overcome God. And throughout his ministry, what is he trying to do? Tries to tempt him to get him to sin. Because then who has dominion over Jesus? Satan does, right? And then he gets his best friends to deny him, and then his one disciple to betray him, and finally he gets his own people, the Israelites, to turn on him and says, you know, we have only one king, and who is it? Yeah, Herod, you know, Caesar. The Israelites, who are they honoring? Not God, but the Roman government. And so when they have a chance to release Jesus or a murderer, was Barabbas a murderer? I forgot. Yeah, who do they pick? And they let the Son of Man be killed on the cross. And who's behind all that? Satan's behind it. Because Satan is what put it in the heart of Judas to betray him. And then when he's on the cross, we see in chapter 12 that this great battle takes place when he goes in the Hadean realm. And that's where the real war is raged. And who is again victorious? Jesus is. And that's the message to the book of in Revelation to the Christians of that day, who again are being slaughtered by Jewish and Roman oppression. And they're asking the question, what gives? I thought you were the sovereign one, the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And so this letter is explaining behind the scenes, we're in an epic battle. It's a spiritual battle. It's always been going on, but don't you worry because God's in charge, and every time Satan thinks he's one up on you, he's actually just playing into my hands. And if you do die at the hand of the people in this world, don't worry, you'll be transported right to heaven, and who will be there wiping the tears from your eyes? That'd be the Father, and we see the Son being there as well. So that was Revelation chapter 7. And so chapter 12 is so important because it pulls back the curtain so you can see what spiritually is going on. And is that warfare going on right now? Ephesians chapter 6, you know, stand, put on the full armor of God so you can stand, because our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against spiritual forces of wickedness in the heavenlies. Now, you can't see it, but Satan is still the god of this world, is he not? And God has his angels. In chapter 1 of Hebrews, in verse 14, they are ministering servants on behalf of those who are going to inherit salvation. Who does that? Who are they servants of? You and me. We're the ones inheriting salvation. You can't see them, but they're here serving us. Do you believe that?
Yes.
Do you believe Satan's angels are trying to destroy you right now? And we have to be convinced the enemy is not flesh and blood. For them, it wasn't the Jews, it wasn't the Romans, it's Satan. And we have to understand that and just pay allegiance to Jesus Christ and be faithful unto death even, and there'll be victory. That's the message, and that's what we're going to see in the rest of this, what we call the earthly apocalypse. Because the first section of Revelation showed God dealing things out from heaven. This is more a picture of what's going on in the earth and what's going to happen. And so, and it'll be a picture of the Jews just persecuting the Christians, riding the back of Rome, because they were an oppressor as well. So we're going to be introducing Nero and the conflict that the Rome had with Christians as well. And of course, God is ultimately going to be in charge. And so here's a breakdown of the chapters. We saw the war in heaven. We're going to see two beasts come about. It's going to be Rome and false prophet. But we're going to see that God is still going to have the gospel preached to the whole world because he'll still prevail in the midst of this. Then there's going to be seven angels introduced, and they're going to be given seven bowls of wrath. And as each wrath bowl is pulled out, another part of God's vengeance upon Israel for killing Christ and the prophets is going to be executed. And guess what? When the seventh bowl is poured out, what did we see in the first section? It was similar to that. Seven trumpets from the seventh seal. We got the seven just going on and on and over and over and again. We're going to see the great harlot then is going to be destroyed. And I'll suggest you'll find out who she is. But Babylon will be fallen. Then in chapter 19, there's going to be this great marriage feast. And then Satan will be bound. All right? That's where we're going. These three chapters we're going to go through quickly. All right? So any questions or comments? All right, so let's look at Daniel chapter 7. Faked you out, didn't I? Because Daniel, Ezekiel, much of the Old Testament sets up the book of Revelation. And that's why especially a Jewish Christian would go, oh yeah, John, I understand what you're writing here in the book of Revelation. Because I understand the apocalyptic language that they've been reading for, well, literally centuries. So Daniel chapter 7, in verse 1, we're in the first year of Belshazzar, the king of Babylon. And Daniel has this dream and vision. And we're going to see this vision of four beasts, and it's very similar to the beasts we're going to be introducing in Revelation 13. And so, verse 2, I saw my vision by night. Behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea, and four great beasts came up from the sea, each different from the other. The first was like a lion, had eagle's wings. I watched till its wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the earth and made to stand like on 2 feet like a man. and a man's heart was given to it. And suddenly another beast, a second like a bear. It was raised up on one side, had three ribs in his mouth and between his teeth, and they said to this, arise, devour much flesh. Do you understand what these are? That's because you're not a Jew, But we're going to try to make some sense of all this. And thus I looked, verse 6, and there was another, like a leopard, which had on its back four wings of a bird. The beast also had four heads, and dominion was given to it. After I saw this night vision, a fourth beast, dreadful, terrible, exceedingly strong, had huge iron teeth. It was devouring, breaking in pieces, and trampling the residue with his feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it. It had 10 horns. 10 horns. Remember that? I was considering the horns, and there was another horn, a little one, come up from among them, before whom three of the first horns were plucked up by the roots. And there in this horn were eyes like of a man, and a mouth speaking pompous words. Wow. Now then he's going to have a vision in verse 9 and 10 of the Ancient of Days, which would be God on the throne. Now we're not going to read that, but I want you to look then down to Verse 13. Then I was watching in a night vision, and behold, one like the Son of Man was coming with the clouds of heaven, and he come up to who? The Ancient Days. And they brought him near before him. Who is this? This is Jesus. What time or event is this speaking of? We already know. We've talked about it. Is his ascension from the earth. From earthly point of view, what did the disciples see? Him leaving and disappearing into the... Did they see where he went? No. They knew he was sitting on the throne because he said, when I pour out the Holy Spirit, that's proof that I am sitting on the throne. That was Peter's argument in the first sermon, Acts 2. Okay? So here's a picture of Jesus ascending to take the throne. Where else do we see this besides Acts chapter 1 and verse 9 and the end of Luke? Where else do we see it? Please, someone say the right answer, or else I've failed in this class. Revelation 7? Well, okay, but that's not what I'm thinking of. It's not a picture of him actually coming up. You're really close, though. 13. No, that's what we're studying tonight. You're really close now. Yeah. What? Back up one. 12. Revelation 12, what we studied last week. Remember, Israel gives birth to the Christ child. Who's trying to devour it immediately? Satan. But where is Jesus then? What happens? What does it say? No, it says he was caught up to... God. Verse 5. He's caught up to God. It skips the death and burial and all that. It just goes right to his ascension. And because in the heavenlies is where this war takes place. Because where is the Hadean realm? In the heavenlies. I don't know where that is. But it's not down in the earth, is it? It's not a physical place. It's a spiritual realm. So here is the same picture of what happened. And he come up the Ancient Day. Verse 14, what's given to him? Dominion, that's right. Glory and a kingdom. Where did we read that? Oh, yeah, good. Very good. Chapter 12, I heard you say it. And when he ascended and they threw down the dragon, he said, now, what verse is that? Is that verse 10? Verse 10, now the king, or salvation, the kingdom, the glory, and the power of the Lord has come. Are these the same picture right here? Yeah. Yes.
And then confirming the verses back in Matthew when he said all power, all authority in heaven and earth is mine.
That's right. That's the end of Matthew. After he'd already resurrected, he's about to ready to go up. This is all done at that point, right? So to him was given this. It's one which will never pass away. His kingdom's the one which will never be destroyed. That was Daniel chapter 2, verse 44. In the last days of those kings, what kingdom was that speaking of?
Rome.
God's going to make his kingdom and it'll last forever. All this points to what God is going to have happen on the cross, but the gospel's not finished yet. So let's read on. Okay? In Daniel. So verse 13. I was grieved in my spirit within my body, and the vision of my head troubled me. I came near to one of those who stood by and asked him the truth of all this. And he told me and made known to me the interpretation of these things. The great beasts, which are four, are four kings. Great beast or what? Think about beast being political authorities, kingdoms. But the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever and ever, forever and ever. Who are the saints of the Most High? Who would that be? I'm sorry? All right. Initially, it's the faithful of Israel who said, I'll make a new covenant, a new kingdom, then eventually included people from all nations, tribes, and tongues, right? And they're going to possess what? What are they going to possess? The kingdom. They'll receive the kingdom, possess it forever. So he wished to know the truth of the fourth beast, which was exceedingly dreadful, and his teeth of iron and nails and bronze, which devoured and broke in pieces and trampled the residue with the ten horns. He said, who is this fellow? Verse 21, I was watching, and the same horn was making war against the saints and prevailing against them. What does that mean? They're losing. What does that mean? They're dying. But they're going to possess this kingdom. This kingdom will never fail. But there's going to be a time period where it looks like the saints are losing the battle. See that? So where am I? Until, verse 22, the ancient days came and a judgment was made in favor of the saints of the Most High, and the time came for the saints to possess the kingdom. Now look with me in chapter 12 of Revelation. Verse 10. This dragon had been thrown down, and that's where he hears this loud voice, now salvation, the power of the kingdom has come. Authority of Christ has come, for the accuser of our brethren has been thrown down. He accuses them before our God day and night. And they, the brethren, overcome because of the blood of the Lamb. And because of the word of their testimony, they didn't love their life even to death. They were willing to die for what they believed to be true. For this reason, O heavens, and you who dwell them, woe to the earth and the sea, because the devil's come down to you, having great wrath, knowing he is only a short time. When the dragon saw that he was thrown down the earth, he persecuted the woman and gave birth to the male child. Who would the woman be? Remember? It's faithful Israel. Who would they be? It be now? The church. And who is it made up exclusively at this time period? Jews. Jews only. You with me? Until Cornelius and the gospel was preached unto the Gentiles. Okay? By the way, did the persecution break out before Cornelius was converted or after? When was he converted? What chapter? Yeah, you guys in your Acts class, when did the persecution break out? Chapter 8. That's very good. Much before. It was against Jews then, wasn't it? All right? So he's waging war with the church, and he pours out water, verse 15, like a river out of his mouth, that's to consume, that he might cause her to be swept away with the flood. But the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened its mouth and drank up the river which the dragon poured out of his mouth. So the dragon was enraged with the woman, and he went off to make war with the rest of her offspring who keep the commandments and hold the testimony of Jesus. Who would be the rest of the offspring? All the other Christians are now in, because we're going to see this persecution becomes worldwide because Rome gets involved in it. Does Daniel 7 speak about the same thing? Because Jesus comes up to the Ancient of Days, gets a kingdom, and this beast is furious and makes war against the saints of the kingdom. Here we see it's Satan doing it, right? And he's going after the church because he thought he had Christ. He had him. But who lost? And then not only did he lose, he lost all those saints that were in his people, those brethren that were under his control. Colossians 1 said they were transferred from the kingdom of darkness into the kingdom of his beloved son. Colossians 1, verse 13. He's furious. And he knows he's just got a little while, so who does he go after? I can't get Jesus anymore, but I'm going after his people. That's what was going on in the book of Revelation at that time period. And that's why God said, I'm going to tell you, Christians, what's really going on behind the scenes. So you know there's a spiritual battle going on, and I'm in charge. Just hang in there. Now, would that be encouraging to them? Is it encouraging to you and me? I don't care if you have relationship problems, marriage problems, financial problems. You have people that hate you at work. They're not your enemy. The one that's waging this battle is Satan, even to this day. And he's trying to destroy you and to get you so fed up you deny Christ and walk away and give up your faith. You got to remember, someone's in charge. It's Jesus Christ. And if we just stay faithful, we're okay. You say, well, I don't understand all the events that are going on in this world. Well, let's look at chapter 13, 14, and 15. And he's going to explain to them what's going to happen. But if he wouldn't explain it, they would have had no clue what was going on either. And so whether we understand who's in charge and who's going to win this election for what reason, does it matter? Because Revelation teaches us once and for all who's in charge. That's right. And that's the takeaway you can have here. Okay?
Part of the key in Daniel 7 is also Daniel 2, because they
right.
It's talking about the lion, it's talking about Babylon, the bears, the Medes, and the Persians.
Right. Yeah, exactly. All right, so verse 1, chapter 13. I stood on the sand of the seashore, and I saw a beast coming up out of the sea. Oh, we read that in Daniel 7. Remember that? And having 10 horns. Oh, yeah, it had 10 horns too. And 7 heads, and on his horns were 10 diadems, on his heads were blasphemous names. And the beast, which I saw like a leopard, and his feet were like those of a bear, his mouth like a lion, the dragon gave him power in his throne, and he had great authority. Wait, I saw beasts, and they had individually these components, but this is a beast that's composite of all those. So when we look at it, we're going to see what's going on here. This amazing beast, these are going to be Satan's helpers. These beasts are not Satan, but Satan is in verse 1. What does it say? No, what does it say in verse 1? The dragon stood. Who's the dragon? Satan. Who come up out of the sea? A beast. Is the beast Satan? No, but it's his helper. He's calling in his generals, if you would. Okay? So we're going to have to make sense of who this is. All right? Now, notice it's a composite of that beast we saw in Daniel 7. Now, that goes back to the big golden throne or statue that Nebuchadnezzar saw in his dream. Head of gold. Silver, bronze, iron, and bronze. Who was the head of gold? Nebuchadnezzar, the grandest kingdom there was. Who was the silver? Medo-Persian. Not as great, but they're going to consume and take over the Babylonians. Who is going to be defeated by? The Greeks, all right? Who eventually be overcome by the strongest, toughest one? But they got divided feet, and they're going to fall too. And that's what those four beasts represented as well, those four nations. This is a composite of all of them because Rome really assimilated all those cultures into its own. Weren't they just a makeup of the Babylonians, Medo-Persians, and Greeks? Yeah. That's why this beast is a leopard and has feet like a bear. And it's like all those together. So if you were an astute study or a student of the Old Testament and you didn't sleep in the synagogue, but you paid attention, would you go, oh, I know who that is. Who is it? Who's this beast? Who? Which one? It's Rome. It's Rome. Rome thinks it's existing by its own power, but who raised it up to do its bidding? Satan. Satan. And we could spend a lot of time giving the evidence for it because there's so many scriptures that deal with this, but that's what it is right here. Seven heads. We're going to find out in chapter 17 that Rome was a city on seven hills, all right? Had seven kings. Five is, or are, were, one is, and one is yet to come. We're going to look at that chart in just a second. And so mountains represent power, don't they? Here's Rome with seven heads representing the power that it brings, the authority. Yeah, JC. Yes.
And it's interesting the way that the Roman Empire was brought up with so many components to it. It was the biggest spread of anything. So it kind of almost unified that entire region and made it prime for when Jesus comes.
Yes.
This was the easiest way to communicate. Everything was wide
yes.
open and it just spread like wildfire.
That's right. But you make a really good point. The first one I'm going to go back to. Did God bring up Babylon to punish Israel? Yes. And here we see a picture of Satan bringing up Rome to punish Christians. Right? This is really ironic. Who's bringing Rome? Satan. What's Rome going to do?
Fulfill God's plan.
By doing what?
Killing
Jesus. No, what's... Rome's coming to kill Christians. Who is Rome's ally in all this nonsense?
The Jews.
Rome's coming to killing Christians. What's God going to use Rome to do? Destroy Israel. So once again, Satan is plotting, and God will turn it all around, and Satan will fail again. The very nation that he raises to do his bidding will actually become his demise. You see that? How does a God do that? Raise up nations to fulfill a plan that he had from way back here, and he announced repetitively throughout the scripture. Read Deuteronomy, read Leviticus. All this was spelled out. Read Daniel again. You know, some 700 years before these events take place, naming the nations. And we worry. You know, I don't know why. It's because, Lord, increase our faith, isn't it? All right, so that's Daniel or chapter 13, but we'll go through some real quick. He's like a leopard, feet like a bear, mouth like a lion. The dragon gave him his power and authority. Who's the dragon?
Satan.
All right, so you guys got it. Here's the four seven hills of Rome, and then chapter 17 and verse 9 with Revelation. We'll see that later. Seven heads or seven mountains. He tells us. So if we read ahead, we go, oh yeah, there's the clue. And the woman sits. There are also seven kings. So in this kind of vision, seven heads can be two things at once, right? Seven mountains and seven kings. You say, well, that's not fair. Well, it's not your revelation. It's Christ. He can make it whatever he wants, right? So seven heads or seven mountains and seven kings. And there are seven mountains in Rome, right? And so then we look at them. There were seven kings. Five have been, one is, and one will become. It's these right here. Because the one is, when he's reading, is who? Nero. So Nero represents Rome. Why? Just because he's the emperor. So when you go overseas, and I've had this happen, and people talk about in Africa, oh, when Obama came over. When Obama comes over, who's coming over?
America.
That's it, the United States. They're one and the same as far as they're concerned. Okay? And that's what we're seeing here. So this is where, it's obviously where the time that this book was written. It's the only thing that makes sense, okay? The temple still stands. It couldn't be after the destruction of Jerusalem. It had to be right in this time period. So Vespasian is the one to come. He's going to initiate the initial conquest of Israel, all right? So here we see this one of his head was slain. His wound was healed. The people are amazed, so they worship the dragon. Julius Caesar was known the first dictator of Rome. He destroyed the republic because Rome was a republic. He was a dictator. He was murdered, and there We thought, well, we're back to a republic, but 13 years later, there was a resurrection of the emperor worship, and everyone after that was named a Caesar after him, and everyone demanded worship as a god without exception, and Nero was one of the worst. Built a big statue, and if you didn't worship him, well, woe unto you. You have to understand the political climate that's going on. It is so oppressive, you did not have a choice. Could you do business at Rome if you didn't honor the god Caesar?
No.
Forget it. If you didn't have the mark of the beast on your forehead, could you do any kind of business in Rome? What is the mark of the beast? We haven't got there, but you already know what it is. Huh?
It's a coin.
Okay, it could be the coin. But is it a literal mark on your forehead or a tattoo or a barcode or your social security implanted as a chip in your wrist?
No,
it's none of that nonsense. Because what is sealed to 144,000? They were given a seal. What does that show? So if you got the mark of the beast, who do you belong to?
Satan.
That's right. You got it. You guys are brilliant students. You know apocalyptic language. All right? Yes.
What's amazing then from the study we've been doing about Paul is when he was in prison in Rome writing those epistles that he was actually, I think, was it probably before Nero that he was in prison? Like,
yeah.
During the household?
Mm-hmm.
That some of these emperors, their own household who was being converted to
right.
God.
Yeah, they say, well, I think it was Nero, while he was away, his wife got converted, or, I got my stories mixed up, so strike that from the tape, okay? This guy's speaking arrogant things, and it's interesting. He opened his mouth, blasphemed against God, blasphemed his name, his tabernacle, those who dwell in heaven. 42 months, remember that's at 3.5 years again? You know, coincidentally, that's the length almost to the date of the siege of Israel, including Jerusalem. But again, we just saw 3.5 was just 7 being complete. It's just an incomplete time, all right? He's not going to be able to rule completely. He's going to be cut short, okay? And then we're going to see also that he was given to him mouth speaking arrogant words and blasphemies. Oh, that's the same thing. He was given him to make war with, didn't we see that in Daniel 7?
Yeah.
And that was Rome back then. And also, Revelation 12, Satan is enraged, so he's going after the church. And he uses Rome here to do it, his bidding. And all who dwell on the earth worship him. Everyone whose name was not written from the foundation of the world in the book of life, and a lamb, excuse me, who has been slain. So who's the only ones that didn't worship him?
Christians.
Because they didn't love their life even unto death. And they maintained the testimony of their word because they knew they were saved because of the blood of the Lamb. All right? So do we have the same things going on today? People worship our government.
Yep.
What I mean, they bow down to the world order, the social order. Well, we were studying Ephesians 2. There's the chapter 2 and verse, 2, that we once walked according to the prince of the ruler of the air, according to the course of this world. And we were dead spiritually. Most people walk according to the world, the political powers, the system. And who's behind all that?
Satan.
And same thing. Then I saw another beast. So that's important. So yeah, Rome. And then we got this one coming up, not out of the sea, but out of the earth. He has two horns like a lamb. Now, what does that suggest to you right away? Huh? Is it ferocious? What is a lamb?
No.
Gentle. It's interesting. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 7, before he says, "Depart from me, I know you not," he says, "Watch out, because there will be many false prophets, and they will come to you like what? Wolves in sheep's clothing, and they're false teachers." And Jesus said in Matthew 24 that many false teachers and prophets will arise before the destruction of Jerusalem. So we're going to suggest that here is one who speaks falsely as a false teacher. I'm pretty close to being convinced in 2 Thessalonians 2, where he said some people were writing that they were getting these letters, the Lord had already come and they had missed out. Remember that in 2 Thessalonians 2? And Paul says, no, that coming won't happen until the man of lawlessness arises, speaking perverse things, doing false miracles to deceive even the elect. And but those that don't have a love of the truth, God will allow a deluding influence, right? Yeah. So they'll turn away from the truth until what? Well, that's marrying another verse. Well, who is this law, of, this man of lawlessness that sets himself up in the temple as though he was God? This is false doctrine, false prophets, and they were happening back then. And that's what we're going to see here. This beast was seized, Revelation 19, verse 20, speaking about this beast, and that's the sea beast, and with him the false prophet. That's this one, the earth beast, who performed the signs in his presence by which he deceived those who received the mark of the beast and those who worshiped his image. There's a lot of fanciful stories about actually fake miracles being done. Some seem to be real, and I don't know the extent of them. You can study it on yourself, but they're always false teachers, even to this day, trying to lead, if possible, even the elect away. And who's behind that?
Satan.
Okay? There's some scripture that we'll talk about it. Now, here's the one that nails it. Don't people love to talk about the mark of the beast? All right. Here is wisdom, verse 18. Let him has understanding. Now, what does that tell you right now? If you got understanding, he says, let him calculate the number of the beast. So is it possible to know who this beast is? Because if you got understanding, just do the math. So he's speaking in language that they go, oh, yeah, I'm with you. I know what you're talking about, Jesus, you know, through John. So we have to understand it. This in the terms of their day, not ours. And the number of this is that of a man, and his number is 666, right? 666. It comes from a process called, how do you pronounce that?
Gematria.
It's assigning number values to your letters in your name, not in English, but in their language, and then adding up all those numbers. So J would be 40, A would be 200, C would be 45. Add them all up, and the mark of the beast of this name adds up to what?
Nero.
666. All right, you're Nero's, right? Here's one I just saw later. That's the Google sign. You see those little sixes? You see them? You take those circles out. There, people are trying to say Google is the sign of the beast, 666. Okay, look, I'll move that right on there. See it? There's a six, a six, and a six. I mean, it's just ridiculous what people want to make this mean. All right?
I'm not, 999.
Yeah, 999. Google might be evil, but it's not the beast, all right? The beast is, who is the beast? It's Rome. It's Rome. Who represents Rome? The king that now is? Nero. So I'll just show you this. You know, you just look at it and you can look at and find the work yourself. You assign the values to his name and his full name is 666. Some Bibles say 616. I think the American Standard. Does anyone have the American Standard? Does any Bible say 616? And that's because Nero is Neron. If you drop the N, you get 616. But his name is not Nero, it's Neron. Do you understand what I'm saying? If you do it, his full name, it's 666. If you just call him Nero, it's 616. And some manuscripts have 616.
What about the other idea that it's seven?
All right.
Is complete?
Okay, let me address that. Because there's good evidence. Okay, I'm going to stay with this. Now we're going to step over here to another explanation of what this could be. How many days did God create the heavens and the earth?
Six.
The seventh day he's rested.
Right.
All right. What day did he make the beast and the man? The sixth day. Is six always short of seven? By what?
One.
So, there is a lot of suggestion. This is, it says in the text, this is the mark of a, what does it say?
Man.
A man. All right? So it might not be Nero itself. It might just be a representing man at large trying to defy God. And there's a case you can make for that. Let's go to the Tower of Babel. What was that all about? Man saying, let's make a tower in the heavens. We don't need God because we can do anything we want. Did God have to put down that riot or that rebellion? Just like that. Man is always doing that. They think they are powerful and knowledgeable enough. And so it could be just representative, not of Nero specifically, but it works there too, which is interesting. But it could just be man itself, representing mankind. It's specifically Rome, though, right? Is that what you were addressing?
Just, again, just simply that seven is always the complete figure. Then six times six times 600 has got to be massively incomplete.
Well, I think if you go six times six is 36, and if you go times six, what is that?
216.
Huh?
216.
Huh? I'm sorry?
Is it
216? Is it six times 36? Yeah. All right. And then what's that times three? 660. Yeah, all right. All right. Now, there's something I thought I read just recently, and it's also, there's multiples of 666 in, how many days was it? 42 months is how many days?
3.5 years.
How many days? 1,280, is that what it was? There's multiples, I think, of 666 in there. Which is, okay, ooh, I don't know, but you could do that work. I don't want to go down that path very often, but we'll stick with Nero, all right?
Many prophecies in the Old Testament have dual meanings.
Yeah.
So
yeah, they do. Well, it's like God's bringing all this together, all of it. And so, okay, Donna, you're right. We're going to stop. Well, here's the number, 144,000. We've seen that one before. Great. We're going to stop. Chapter 14 goes real quickly. It's going to say, okay, that's what Satan is doing, raising up his army. But meanwhile, chapter 14, we're going to see God still preaching the gospel everywhere. It's going to take over the whole known world. So we're going to see that while Satan is doing his work, the mystery of lawlessness, the mystery of God is playing out through the preaching of the gospel to the Jews first, then to all the Gentiles. And here's the last thing I'll say about here. They're purchased from the earth. That means they're safe and secure. We're going to see that this is another angel preaches the gospel to every living being. So it's Jew and Gentile. And then we're going to see in... Babylon's going to fall. That's going to be Jerusalem. We'll show you that later. Then there's another angel. If you worship the beast, you're going to drink of the wine of the wrath of God. So don't go there. And then finally, verse 13, this is where we're done. Blessed are the dead who die in the Lord from now on. Now, maybe that, who's got the invitation? Oh, you want to speak on that one? This is the most comforting thing there is for you and me today. Happy is he who dies from now on in the Lord. And you go, why? Because your suffering is over. Not only is your suffering over, you're immediately transported to the throne of God. Doesn't matter what Satan's planning. And he's just destroying the saints. And there's a battle for the kingdom because the Jews are still saying, we're the kingdom. And no, we're the kingdom. But when it's all done, who will possess the kingdom? Daniel said, the saints. That hasn't happened. It won't happen until they totally possess it until 70 AD. But meanwhile,
No. When you die, you rest from your what? Yeah, it's done. And when you contemplate this and get, it just starts to sink in. You become like Paul. I'd rather die and be with Christ, because that's gain. All right. Thank you. We'll look at chapter 16 or 15 next week, because I finished 14 right there.